All right, let's get to it. Let's hear this conversation with Kevin Von Erich. Ding, ding, ding. Folks, we've got a very special guest with us today. It's someone I've wanted to talk to for a very long time. I had an opportunity to get to know one of the family members pretty well during my time with the WWF, WWE. I want to welcome Kevin Von Erich of the legendary Von Erich family. Kevin, thank you so much for coming on Primetime. How are you?
It's my pleasure, Sean. How are you?
I'm fantastic. I think you're better than me, though, right now, because you're in Hawaii where you live, and I know that they've got some volcanic activity over there, but it just must be a tremendous place to live.
Well, we're kind of spread out. We're not, the Big Island is 300 miles away from here to the east. We're in Kauai.
Oh, boy.
It's the other end of the island chain, and it's a little more north, but we're a good 300 miles. But the trade winds do bring that gas by us every now and then, and so it is something to consider. But, it's pretty diluted from after coming 300 miles, so, we're not in a bad way. Thank goodness. No. But sure feeling sorry for those people on the Big Island. They're having trouble.
Yeah, and we see it every day. You know, I'm a news anchor. I do a morning show here in Arizona. And, Kevin, it seems like, whenever an event happens, and all we see it is through our television screens and the video that they capture, and they have these live events, all this happening right as it's going on. We see the big lava flows. And it looks like, when you see stuff like that, you're going, boy, all of Hawaii is under this big threat of a volcano. But that really isn't the case, though, is it? And that's also kind of a sparse area of a population, too, where that volcano is actually happening, right?
Well, it is, yeah. We're an island that really don't, they act like they don't want the tourist industry, really. In fact, there's usually bumper stickers say, keep it quiet,
because right.
We have a really big surf here. We have more drownings than any other island, though. We have really strong currents and really high surf, and there's only 70,000 people on the island, but it's an extreme island. But there's more waterfalls than any other island. We got a lot more rain than the others. It's quite a bit different. The water is even 1 degree cooler, and so we have more diverse fish, they say too. But and we do fish. We spear fish and we fish with a rod and reel. So we live a natural life out here. I wanted to raise my sons completely. I knew that I wanted a completely natural life for them. My father was an athlete, and all of my brothers were, and when you decide something's going to be your living, you put all of yourself into it. And so lo and behold, I raised my sons to be athletes. I wanted to be optimum conditions and came out here, and they don't have the preservatives and the food colorings and the flavorings and the dyes and all that are in foods. And you wonder, people are sick. I just wanted to avoid that, Sean. I wanted to do my best. Out here, they don't even put fluoride in the water.
Wow. So how long have you been there? Because I know it's been a while, and we'll get into how you ended up getting there as we get along with this conversation. But how long have you been there?
I think it's about 12 years now.
Really? And you just, was it one of those kind of things that you'd been there a few times and said, if I was going to go live somewhere, or was it one of those kind of point of place on the map and say, okay, we're going there?
Well, actually, it wasn't, Sean. It was, I had some, I wanted to raise my kids in a, like I told you, optimum conditions. But
right.
I was looking at Costa Rica. I wanted to live down there, and I was looking at property all along the Pacific coast from Caicos all the way down to Gulf Vito, and Osa Peninsula down in Great Bay. Along that, we were just, that was beautiful to me. That's what I wanted. But the Spanish and the schools, it was just too tough. And we just really got lucky to find this place out here because I wanted to just get away. But I needed the ocean, needed I travel and I've come to love the ocean, and my sons do too. And so, it's been a really good place for us to raise my grandchildren out here.
Are you right on the water there, or?
No, we're about 3 miles off the beach, kind of up in the mountains.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Okay. Like I said, we'll get into really how you guys ended up there. But, you know, Kevin, as people get into the legend of the Von Erich family, and there's always, they say there's the curse surrounding the family and all of this that goes on the way. And I think what got lost in a lot of this over the years, of who those brothers are, who the brothers were. And, you know, I want to take you back a bit, but tell me what it was like in those early days with the brothers. I know there was a tragedy early with the loss of your brother Jack, but there were some wonderful years, I would think, and maybe you'll tell me different, but as far as how you guys began wrestling, and I don't think a lot of people know the story.
My father was a bad guy, and it was, you kind of get that us and them mentality. We were brothers, and we adored each other. We were close. That's where we went. Our dad was a bad guy, but he was our dad, so he was right. You know, I mean, we couldn't stand to watch when one of the brothers would be designated to watch one. The other, if we heard booing, we knew dad was winning. But if we heard cheering, we knew dad was losing. We couldn't watch if we heard cheering because we knew dad was losing. It's tough on a little boy, but we were really close, and I'm saying that probably had a lot to do with it. It's because there's an us and them kind of mentality, I suppose. But, you know, we came to have good friends in school. But as young kids, I bet that did have a lot to do with it.
Yeah. And from very early on, do you just remember going to these matches, just being around the ring? Or did you guys have this, this was just part of your life?
Yeah, it pretty much was. It was, now, there were days I remember when people would wear suits to the, in St. Louis, the people would have lobster and steak as they watched the matches and drinks, and they wore suits. And it was, I think they had that in New York, and they had it in Cleveland, and may have had it somewhere in Canada too, up in Montreal or Toronto. But, you know, because we did travel, but it was, like you said, it was a ring every night, you know, but it was, you know, we, a lot of times we'd stay hotel or, when we were in Calgary, we stayed with, you know, I think we lived up with the Hearts for a long time. A lot of wrestlers lived up there. Got a big spread in Calgary.
Yeah. It must have been, awesome, having so many brothers around then, just to give everybody kind of, keep them in their minds. You know, you were first born, I think you were born in 57, and then, David, a year later than that?
58.
And, yeah. And then Carrie, in 60, and then Mike a little later on in 64, and then there was Chris in 1969. Right. And was that just madness around the house when you have that many boys?
Yeah, I suppose it was.
Yeah.
You know, hey, you brought that up. I was, my little brother Mike was, you know, he's probably one of the most misunderstood people in wrestling. A lot of people don't think Mike didn't want to wrestle, but he did. Yeah. The truth was. And a lot of people want to think Mike wasn't an athlete, a good athlete, but I'm going to tell you, nothing could be farther from the truth. He was an excellent athlete. I came across a newspaper article the other day from junior high, a track meet where most of us, we came from a small school. We all ran five events in track, you know, and Kerry and I, you know, we were both discus and shot put, and then we also ran the 400 meter, but I ran the high hurdles and the low hurdles, and you know, we all jumped. No, anyway, we all had running events. I looked and it said Mike had won all five of his events, and four of them were meet records. Three of them were meet records that he had set the year before. Wow. And he just never bragged and talked about such things, but he was a stellar athlete. I think probably of all of us, the best at football at that age. And I remember, you know, because Dave and I were wrestling so hard when Mike was going through high school. Kerry was really doing the big brother job, and so I didn't really know all that, but I knew Mike didn't brag, but he was a good athlete, and people shouldn't say that he wasn't, because it's really not fair. He was a really gifted athlete.
So what other sports did you guys though excel in? Like you said, you were all gifted athletes. Was football a big part of your lives? Because, I mean, Texas and, you know, football go together. Was there baseball? Did you guys do other things?
Oh, no, we didn't play baseball. But I guess that's just part. Yeah, in Texas, you know, that's what we do. We just you know, throw the football around or whatever. I run the high hurdles, the low hurdles, and high jump 6'6", you know. And went to state and high jump, high hurdles and all. And it was Kerry, believe it or not now, Kerry now weighed 198 pounds, you know, which is 200 pounds. Kerry now weighed 220. Yeah. And Kerry was high jumping 6'4". So, wow. you know, that's both of us being able to jump over our heads. But for Kerry to be to weigh 220 and to get up 6'4", a lot of people don't realize how much. We figured to be in good shape, Kerry and I had a motto where we had to, you know, we'd all run our 400, we'd run five 400 meters on Wednesdays, you know, run five, check your pulse when it goes back to regular, run another one, check your pulse, go back another, run another, so we run five on Wednesdays, we do that. And so we, as long as we kept them all under a minute, as long as we could high jump over our head and bench press twice our weight, that was that was kind of what Kerry and I considered in shape. As long as we could do that, we were good.
Yeah. Now you mentioned wrestling, and were you training already with professional type moves, or were you, you know, like in high school, you know, serious wrestlers? Did you guys do any of that as well?
Well, as a matter of fact, I had a small school and only had one wrestling match. We only had one match with our little high school, Lake Dallas, wrestled Plano High School, and they had a state champion there. And they had we were the only other team that had a wrestling team, the only school that had a wrestling team, pretty much because of my dad. Mm-hmm. And so, because I weighed 180 pounds at the time, I was a junior, and I wrestled their third biggest guy. They had their biggest guy wrestled our biggest, and we had to do it like that. So I was third. Right. Well, our first guy got beat. Our second guy got beat, and I won mine. So I can say in amateur wrestling, I was undefeated and by pinfall, too. He's only had one.
That's great.
But I did win that. It was a big thing for us, but no, because none of us won again, but none of our school won again, but that was a little brag I can give you.
Well, you know, you look at these pictures back when you guys were kids, and you guys are like Adonises. You look at Kerry and the physique he had. Well, did you start lifting weights early, or did you just have, because some people just do, they have like this natural physique, and if they have any, they do any kind of athletic activity, they just get big. I mean, what was it like for you guys?
I appreciate it. Let me tell you, Kerry was an amazing athlete. It was just a great athlete, and it was such balance and snap and agility and quick thinker. But and same with Kerry and I looked at the weight room as just to be better at what we did, you know, to be a better wrestler, to be a better football player, I'll lift your weights. And this bodybuilding, I always considered it a joke. I mean, who are you competing against? The mirror? To me, it's like it's pointless. And really, Kerry agreed with me on that. But for wrestling, it became, you know, it was important. And Kerry did have a really beautiful body, but I really never looked at it like a beautiful body type, bodybuilder type thing. I wanted to be a better wrestler, and that's the reason I lifted and ran and did the workouts I did. Was not to look good, was just to be in shape. So,
wow. I mean, you look at these pictures, though. Yeah, but you look at you guys, and you look like bodybuilders. It's like amazing that the kind of shape you guys are in.
The thing is, Kerry did like bodybuilder stuff. You know, he'd pull the skin off his chicken and wouldn't put the soy sauce on his rice. And
really, even then?
Stuff like that, you know, but I didn't. I like Twinkies and all that junk food, you know, but I never cared about that. I eat Mexican food all the time. And, you know, it's like, but if as long as you go to exhaustion every day, you don't have to worry about what you eat. You know, that's just, doesn't matter. No, that's a joke. That's a wives' tale, bud. Let me tell you for sure.
Where did Kerry get that, though? Sure. Did he study that stuff to know that, you know, heavy protein? Because it wasn't certainly as well-known, you know, we see it today.
When he went to the University of Houston, he was a discus thrower. And he learned a lot from Coach Tom Tellez there, who was also the Olympic coach that year. And he had high hopes, you know, and they had recruited him to, you know, for the Olympics, too. So he was – but it turned out that – Kerry was just a good athlete. And when it came to bodybuilding or when it came to lifting, I don't think he ever was actually a bodybuilder, but he did spend 4 hours in the gym. I mean, I never spent more than 45 minutes, but I did work hard during those 45 minutes. Yeah. And that's actually a long time, believe it or not. But to carry 4 hours was, and think about this, anybody that will spend every day 4 hours in the gym will think about how they're, when he lost his foot, I was proud of him. For Kerry to come back as a wrestler with one foot, I thought was a great thing to be proud of, but he was ashamed of himself. Mm. And somebody that spends 4 hours in the gym, you got to think like him. He was half a man in his mind. He was, it was terrible. It's a terrible way to think. Bodybuilding is maybe it's an image of something that's not really there. I mean, that's, you can perform in wrestling. You could still perform without the foot. But I think it did something to his psyche using that foot. He never really had that light in his eye again after that.
You know, it's, and I was, we're kind of jumping ahead here, but since you mentioned it, and, you know, I remember knowing that or hearing that and really, in a sense, not even believing it, because you lose a part of a foot, then that people, you know, you lose a toe and their balance is affected. And yet you could never tell, really. His gait was not really, different, really, that bad much. And you could never have known the way he carried himself and performed in the ring is just amazing.
Well, you should have seen him on a unicycle when we were kids. You know, those unicycles, we used to play basketball on it, and we could all do it. But Kerry could do all sorts of tricks. He had amazing balance. So he could adapt real easy, I'm sure.
Well, is that, and when that happened, how long did it take him? Somebody just, like I said, if you lose a toe, it takes a long time to be able to just even walk normally.
I did a thing on Vice TV came out here for about 3 days, and they had shot something on Gino Hernandez, and they shot something on Bruiser Brody, and they come out and decided to do a story out here, and we just got done. I just got through talking to them about the very same thing. And so I'm not sure when that'll be on, but I'd plug it if I could. But it's people ask that, and you know, don't be afraid to ask me anything, because everything I went through for a reason. If I can do service to somebody, help them through something they're going through, or maybe help them make a decision they're faced with right now, then I'm up for it 100%. There's no reason, no way I would go through that pointless. I want to better my fellow man if I can at all costs. I know what's important in life is, and I'll answer to that. How I treat my fellow man, I'll do my best. Guarantee you. So ask me anything, I'll sure be glad to tell you.
Yeah, you know, we're kind of moving along there, because the early days of your family, I just, you know, there's, like I said, when we started talking, is that people just focus on what happened, and they don't really talk about how talented these individuals were, and the fact that the impact that the family had, and it's a tremendous honor that you guys were inducted into the WWE. I think that recognition is tremendous, but I think that some of the story has been lost, because when they do these, you know, documentaries or you know, these stories, they miss a lot of that. And when I do my podcast, when I talk to people, I'm always fascinated, Kevin, by the path that people travel. Because in many cases, and it certainly is true in other professions, other athletes, whatever they travel, but in many cases in the world of professional wrestling, many of these people that become successful professional wrestlers, they travel an incredibly tough road. It is not an easy business. It is fraught with you know, failures and setbacks and rejection. I really wanted to talk to you about you know, having that family, that early influence, how your dad brought you guys into the business and trained you guys, and then what it meant to.
Let me tell you, thank you for your question. That's so considerate of you. And let me say, my father was the best wrestler that I've ever known. I've heard the crowd react like they, to this day, the way they did my father. The way, you know, when you really have the crowd and they stomp their feet, that rumble, the building kind of vibrates.
Oh, yeah.
That only happens every five or six shows, you know, but
yeah,
when it does happen, it's beautiful, you know, and Dad was that exciting. You heard that song, that sound constantly, and it was like, you know, he was that good, and he was always a sellout, and so he was, and I can say the same of my brothers. They were all, you know, I'll pat them all on the back. They were all so gifted. They packed the buildings, and it was what it's all about, butts and seats. You know, that's the only thing that should matter. That's the only true barometer of a wrestler success, I would say, is these, how many people would pay to watch you, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, and you know, the other matter. Yeah, the other big part of this, and I'm glad you kind of brought up about your father, but and it's still true today that you know, we've seen thousands of physical specimens, and we've also seen thousands who can do these, you know, tremendous moves in the ring, but the ones who make it are the ones that can combine that, of course, but the psychology of what happens in the ring and knowing an audience and how to bring them. And it sounds to me, because I never had the pleasure of meeting your father, but he was someone who was very aware of that and very good at recognizing how that worked in a ring.
Oh, Sean,
it passed it on.
The same way in football. I remember In football, they were the same way. For who your father was, they wanted to know, and it's important. And I'm telling you, even today now, I can see how my dad handed down these genes to Dave, Curry, and me. It was like wrestling was so second nature to us. It
really?
Was unfair, actually, Sean, seriously. It was unfair because we were too good at it. It was like we were born in that ring. And my sons, you just imagine that times two, because they were born on the road with me. And not only that, when they broke in, I sent them to Japan. I knew people would say that, you know, because you were born there, she had it easy, because that's what they said to me or my dad. Exactly the same condition. And so I put them over in that dojo and the Japanese as young boys. 2 years of that, bowing to everybody, building the ring, taking it apart, taking the trash out, living in a dojo, 1,000 sit-ups, push-ups a day, 1,000 of this. You know how they treat those kids.
Yeah.
And my kids stayed there and gutted it out, because if you want to do it, you'll pay the price. And
right,
I have to say they did, Sean. I don't know if I would have. People don't know this, and I don't think I ever said it, but of all the brothers, you know who wanted to be a wrestler least was me.
Really?
I wanted to play football until I hurt my knees. That was my plan. But it was just a job. Once I got in the ring, I enjoyed myself, which
right.
show, but that was after I decided. But in the beginning, I did not. I planned on football.
No. Oh. How early were you guys in the ring when you could say that you were actually seriously training to become professional wrestlers? Was that always kind of you knew that that's what your father wanted you to do, or did he? Mm. Give you a choice.
No, son, believe it or not, Dad wanted us to get college degrees and wanted us to do something else. I think he really didn't.
Really?
But, I mean, you know, watching him in the ring, I guess it went down inside us that, I mean, to us, that was success. I mean, that was what I wanted to do. I thought he was great. You know, Sean, I thought my dad was great. And so did my brothers. We just had the most idyllic childhood. And he made it that way. We lived out in the country, and nature was our brother. We were out before daybreak almost most days on horses or on foot, and always catching animals or something, or just swimming in wild water, just always having fun. He gave us a great childhood. We were close probably because of that too, but it was wrestling was just natural. We loved our dad, and that's what he did, and we wanted to be like him. And I don't think that's so, it might be new in this day to day, but there was a time that was maybe nice, normal, you know?
Yeah.
Obviously normal. No, we thought our dad was great. We loved him. We thought he was great.
Did you think that way then? Because a lot of us don't understand that, because, you know, your dad was known to be someone who could be affectionate, I guess, but also a very tough on you. Did it take you a while longer into your adulthood to realize what lessons in life he was teaching you?
Sean, I'm so glad you told me that too, man. Let me say to everybody out there who didn't have a dad that loved them, bless you. Listen, you had a tough go. This is being, you might have got dealt a crappy hand in life by having a dad that treated you like that, or maybe, who knows, even worse. But you come through that. You shine through that, and the glory that you'll have is 10 times what it would have been. I think any man can say God is great when he's got a full stomach, you know, and you've got a Lincoln Continental parked outside. But what will you say when you're empty stomach? What will you say when you're suffering? That's what counts. If you've had a strike against you, then use it. Use it, because that's what it's all about. We've got 100 years to prove to what team we're on. Who are you? You know, decide. Show who you are. Fight for it, because folks, don't believe what you hear. It all does count. It's all real important. Treat each other as you would yourself. Love each other. Consider each other as more important than yourself, and your life will be so good. God will see you have a good day. The Bible says, so it will go well with you. And boy, does that ever mean just that. Mm-hmm. Try it. The people call it karma, but it's biblical. It's just a fancy word for it. Try it, y'all. I'm telling you, you'll be so grateful. And it all starts with loving your dad, I guess, because my dad, I'm trying to think, why do I know this? Because I wasn't raised Christian. You know, my parents, we went to church on Easter, but we weren't raised Christian at all. It was something that came to me when my brothers were dying. I'd never really got into it as deep as I did when I was really suffering. But I can say that I was really down. A bunch of people must have prayed for me, because I had to have answers. And I sought them, and I did find them. And I can just say what works for Kev. I'm no teacher. You know, teachers will be judged different than a regular man. So I don't want to be judged any different. I just want to do my best and tell people what I know to be true. And so, and I can only say what works for me, but I know there is a God, and there is a devil who wants to ruin your day and steal all he can from you. Treat each other like he's your brother, and your day will go well for you. I promise you.
Yeah.
Remember, Jesus died for your sins. And if you have a relationship with God and Jesus in your heart, you can pray for anything and trust your decision, because it'll be from him. So ask him tonight while you're both going to go to sleep. In your heart, it'll be the best decision you ever made. I promise.
People wonder, and I do want to talk to you about how you got through all that grief, but I want to hear more about the best period of with those people that were in your life. And a lot of people have heard of the WCW, but I don't know. We don't hear too much these days about the WCCW. And tell me about that wrestling organization. Something that your father was, I'm sure, very proud of, and what you were able to accomplish there. You guys had great houses when you guys were all together. Was there a period of time, as you look back, that was, I guess, kind of the glory days, that, you know, that you just remember a period of time that was just being with those guys and it just being a great period of your life?
Well, I wouldn't say a great period. It's the only period I remember anything to hold it up against. My dad was president in the NWA ever since I can remember. All of the wrestlers came by my house at one time or another. Andre the Giant was a family friend, came to two of my high school football games, and I loved Andre. We were like brothers. He came to two of Dave's basketball games. Kerry came to Kerry's birthday party. Andre, we had the bear. We had the wrestling bear come to our schools, you know, every year. We were a wrestling family, all right. But it was because, you know, my dad was president of the Alliance. But in those days, it was different. There were territories. It was before this, you know. So it's different now. But then it was, that's the only way I knew. That's all I grew up in.
And you think of some of the great names that came through the territories there. You guys, you probably saw them all, right? With you mentioned Andre, but I'm sure many others come to mind.
That's right. Yeah, it seems like all of the big names came through Texas, came through world class. It's kind of like if you look through all of the champions, it seems like this is where we learned to, we let our wrestlers decide their own character. We didn't tell anybody how to act or who to be. We wanted to be organic. And because it was like that, I think a lot of guys like Shawn Michaels and Steve Austin were able to develop their own characters and characters they made themselves up. Nobody has put as much thought into that character as he has, and you're crazy not to use that. But that's what I found in the business. And so there are a lot of big names in wrestling because they came from world class. It's almost like a who's who, because guys were able to develop and be themselves here. We didn't have backbiting in our dressing rooms. We had guys that wanted each other to do well, so that we had a time where our tickets sold so well that scalpers bought them up before the people had a chance. We had to, in fact, we had to raise prices because of that. But the scalpers were buying all of our big shows, all of our tickets up. So, you know, we were crazy popular. You know,
what kind of houses did you have? I mean, how many thousand people would you have at some of these shows?
Oh, you're talking about 19 years. I just can't, I can't sum it up in a few words. I can tell you this, my dad was over so well in Japan. Yeah. It's unbelievable. Everybody there knows who Fritz von Erich is. Everyone. And I mean, I don't care if you're a fan or not. I was watching a King Kong and Godzilla movie or Mecha Monster or whatever, you know, all those crazy monsters. And one of them put the claw on the other one. The Iron Claw. I've been hearing him say, "I'm in the claw." You know,
we scared the death out of him. Over there with that. Yeah. And then they do the thing with the claw, and then the blood would flow, and they would just go out of their minds. I do want to get back to what we were talking about with, as far as, you know, some of these great names that you and your family came across early days, and one of them that you had quite a relationship with is Ric Flair, who that's all I have to do is mention his name, but. What was that experience, the experiences that you had working with Rick?
Well, you know, Rick's an artist, you know, he's Rick. But I'll tell you this, that's not to take anything away from Dory or Terry Funk. Both those guys were great champions. Harley Race was a great champion. He kept coming at you. He was always had it. He knew the business so well. But Dory and Terry Funk were like scientists. They knew a counter for everything, and they knew a way out of everything, just like Jack Briscoe, another great champion. Jack Briscoe could pull a trick out of a hat any time of the match. You know, and Rick has this too, but, you know, I don't want to take away from the guys, because I was lucky enough to wrestle all the champions in their prime, and I don't want anyone to be left out, because they all had such good attributes, and Rick sure had his, especially on the microphone. But, you know, I just don't want to take away from your Jack Briscoes and your Funk Brothers and Harley and even Dusty. I mean, there were some good champions out there.
Well, with that in mind, Kevin, though, and let's speak in kind of general terms of these guys. What is it about that? And I guess we can call it old school. I mean, I guess it's an easy way to describe it. But what is it about those guys and the way they did business, the way that they worked in the ring, and that separates them from that next generation, if you didn't come up through that, say, a family or connected to it?
Oh, wow, Sean, you can go a lot of different directions with that question. I remember it seems like whenever we'd have a good deal at a hotel, one of the boys would screw it up. And it doesn't seem like that's as bad a thing now. I think now they appreciate what they've got.
A little
better than the old days.
Yeah, but the way they did things, like you said, everything with the psychology and
yeah, for sure, Sean. You know, I like wrestling best when I go on my opponent. You know, I don't want a writer to be involved at all. Yeah. I want to work on the guy I'm wrestling with. I want to look him in the eye and see what he's up to. I want to listen to the people and react on that. I want the match to go that way. If it feels right, go with it. And, you know, if you get corrected, you get corrected, but it all looks good. I mean, that's, you know, when I say corrected, because both men are working. You know, it's just, there's a different way to work. My sons are going to be on television on NBC Saturday nights after Saturday Night Live, and it's a new kind of wrestling. It's called World Class Revolution. Well, folks, the Von Erich generation is about to make a full revolution. My sons have been trained, and they've gone out and seen the world. They've been on every continent, and they've wrestled. They have know every style. They've got a great repertoire now. And my sons are wrestling a style. Let's watch this different type. I think it's time for a change in wrestling. I love.
Do you see it happening with what we're seeing now with the NSA Ring of Honor and you know what Cody Rhodes is doing and some of these other independent organizations that are really starting to, you know, Major League Wrestling. They've got Fusion. Now they've got a new cable deal. Do you see, I don't know, I think you just said evolution of these organizations?
These are the kind of names. These are the kind of names that I think are going to be coming to us. That I think that this is a natural flow the business is going in. And mm-hmm. I think that your top wrestlers are going to be drawn towards this just like moths to a flame. I think we're all gonna benefit from this, all of us.
And why do you think that? Why is it different than the product that we've grown so accustomed to?
Sean. I think to me it's almost maybe it's gone stagnant. Maybe mm-hmm. it's too predictable. Maybe it's too I don't know. Maybe it's got too much of a trademark on it. It's almost like I just think every okay, let's face it. I'll put it this way. In real estate, the old rule of thumb used to be every 7 years, your property doubles, you know, and that's kind of how any investment would be. Well, yeah. If 7 to 10 years, and wrestling is overdue for a change, it's been 20. So since the Von Erichs, it's been 30, and it's going to be a beautiful revolution, and it gets going full cycle. And let's, instead of me try to define it and pick it apart and tell you what it is or isn't, the proof is going to be on that screen, on that TV screen. So watch the boys. Watch coming up their first match. They just had it. And I know you're going to like it. So watch what comes up.
Where can people catch this?
It's NBC. It's going to be on Saturday night after Saturday Night Live. And it's called World Class Revolution. Yeah, it's in 172 markets, but it's going to be growing.
Wow, that's awesome! And how did your kids get involved? How did the boys get involved?
Sean, you wouldn't believe me if I told you, but it was just prayer. I knew that it was not in one man's hand. I trust God with all my heart, and I said, God, they're giving it 100%, Lord. And I know you will not let them down. And I pray for a miracle, and the miracle's here, Sean. Watch this. It's just going to be beautiful. It's going to be so organic, so natural, something that wrestling has not seen in a long time. A breath of fresh air.
Yeah, well, you mentioned that, your faith has carried you a long way. But going back losing those brothers that were so close to you, a lot of people wonder, like, how in the world you could get through that. I mean, I couldn't imagine what it's like, and I've been blessed that I haven't lost someone that's close to me like that, that's a brother or a child. I don't know if there's any greater grief someone could experience. How did you get through it?
Man, I'll tell you, it can do one of two things to you. It can either make you hate the world, like, easy way to go, or it can do something else to you. And I don't mean something you choose. I mean, it can make you see suffering in a whole different way. You don't want anybody. What you want, I mean, you're just, and when you suffering it, like, you hurt for them because you see it. And I think it turned my ears on to a way that I didn't have before, but I do well on my race, that I remember my treasures not on earth, but on up in heaven. And so I'm just going to do my best and let him keep the score, you know, and just because that's what it's all about to me, is what side are you on? Who are you? We get 100 years to prove it. You know, I mean, if you're lucky, you get 100 years. Most guys can get 25 like Dave. You know, not most of them, but a lot of them do. But he knew, and there's, you know, life is tough, but a man has to be tough. And so you got up and take it. I know that a lot of you were dealt a bad hand. Your father was this or that and wasn't there. And I know we've all got terrible stories, y'all. The more you bounce back, the higher your glory is in a payment, and God will repay you in secret. Trust me on this. I'm not a preacher. I'm just telling you, as your neighbor, as your brother Kev.
Well, Kevin, and one thing that certainly has touched your life is suicide. I lost my father when I was 18 to suicide. And one thing that people don't understand, and I heard an interview that you had done, and they were talking about Carrie, and you know that I got to know Carrie very well. We got to do a lot of appearances together, and just one of the nicest people, not just superstars that I've ever met, nicest person, you know, one of the nicest people I've ever met in my life. And I heard an interview you did, and where he was in a really, really bad place, and it was talking about ending his life, and you did everything you could, and yet you still lost him. You couldn't get there in time. And people, I think, that have kind of this idea that, yeah, there's something you can do. You can keep them from doing something like that. And when it comes down to it, you can't. And you know, it's today, I think that especially coming from you, a message, we have got a lot of young people out there that reach this this pit where they feel there is no other answer.
Yeah, the veterans, these veterans, so many a day, it's incredible. You know, that is so heinous. That is the most horrible thing I can imagine. You know, listen, some people, you might be thinking that's an out, but Sean, how old were you when you lost your dad? But
I was 18.
Oh, you were 18.
Yeah. But he was, it's like a whole week, we could go into the whole history of, but he was somebody that was a pretty abusive person. I mean, it wasn't you know, a good situation, but at the same time, it's your father, you know? And I look today, and there's so many kids out there that are struggling, and I just think that we have to get out there, we have to talk to these kids.
Look, but there you are, 18-year-old kid. You got kicked in the nuts, and now look at you, kicking ass on radio, bud. Way to go. You fought through it, man. A light shines in the dark, you know, in the storm is when people need the light, man. Way to be, buddy. Sean, I'm telling you, man, that you took a win out of fire, man. Good job.
Yeah. But I think that a message from you, and like you said, I don't know if there's any other, the depths that you came from, and to hear that there is light, Sean, you know,
but you tell me that, but you know, really, I didn't have a choice. You know, you'd have done the same thing. What could I do? Lay down and die? You know, my brother, I adored him. I loved him, but I got a wife and I have a baby, you know, I got to gut up, you know, I got to be tough. And so I did have to, but Sean, you would have too. You'd have done it too, man, because I didn't have a choice, you know?
But with so much tragedy, though, in your family, though, I saw another interview where you said that you knew that that the devil wanted you. I mean, they wanted you dead because you were supposed to follow, I guess, in this tragic, you know, path. But what was it that made you said, no, this is not going to be my choice in life? I'm going to live. I'm going to.
When you sit around, that Thanksgiving table that used to be full, or Christmas, because we always ate together, and or when I'd get in a ring and I'd see hi Kev or hi Dave or how the brothers talked, you know, all the brothers were main eventers, and so they all had marks a lot, and we signed autographs in the corner, and so they'd always write a message to one of us on the turnbuckles, you know, and I guess they'd leave it up there because it was. Made them like remember my brothers or whatever, but you know, I'd see stuff that would remind me of them, you know, and it'd be like hard, man. It was really tough, but you know, it was once it started to be painful for me, I got out because I knew it would lead to a bad thing. I wanted people to see me enjoy myself or not see me at all.
So we mentioned being in Hawaii, and you said that. You know, some people, you know, go and just go away and go to paradise or whatever and leave everything behind. But you said you had nothing else. Your whole family was gone, basically.
Well, that's it. Being kind of rootless, you know. A lot of people couldn't just take up and move to Hawaii because, you know, you have responsibilities. I did. I had a mother, you know. And but I was able to move her out here, and she loved orchids, and so I was able to put her in a place where she could raise her orchids and all. In fact, she lived here on the property with us, and her room is beautiful view. And when she passed away, it was really beautiful in the natural way. It was the way she deserved, a lady that loved her children so much and was hurt so bad, you know. It's just, she did her best, but, you know, we're human.
So was that really a new beginning, in a sense? Do you look at it that way when you went to Kauai?
Did, like, it was a new beginning, kind of like?
Yeah.
I guess so, yeah. I planned on doing it for a long time, but only after my son got out of high school and got through with his football could we do that, you know. And and also I was watching the market, and it wasn't right. And when it would, when the market did turn and it was time to pull the trigger on it, we did. And thank goodness we didn't wait too long, because we got out there just in time. But we, you know, it was like jumping off a cliff. You know, there's a time when you've leaned so far forward you can't do anything but jump. And so I got myself to that point on purpose. Right.
Wow. Are you really isolated there? Or is it,
I'm really
a lot of neighbors
isolated
around?
You don't hear jets fly over here. You don't, there's no, the, you know, you don't hear airplanes. It's just like completely quiet. You're, you know, we do have roosters because of the, you know, Aniki blew over the rooster. People used to fight roosters and here, and they got loose, and, you know, they, now they don't do it anymore. I know a lot of animal lovers would go nuts, and I sure don't get that one, because these chickens love to fight. And now that they're all out of their cages, they're fighting anyway, so don't figure that one.
Yeah. Well, that's
funny. You know, tell me this. You remember those days when people smoked in the buildings?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that included some of the boys.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. But I can remember by the time the last match came, you couldn't even see the ring. It was so
impossible. Yeah, those were...
And they talked about secondhand smoke.
Yeah.
You know, they talked about how bad secondhand smoke is. Think about it. If anybody would show that, it would be either us or rock stars, you know, that have people smoking in the arena, you know. The people that do ours, you know, couple 2-hour shows, you know, those people are the people that would be exposed to, that's who they should have used as test subjects to decide if secondhand smoke was dangerous.
No kidding, because they inhaled enough of it. Did you basically hang it up in 2005? Is that when you I know you've done a few other things since then, but was that pretty much the point where you decided that you were done?
Yeah, I did. I didn't. Roddy Piper was a friend of mine and called me up and wanted me to do something. And so I went and did a Piper Spit thing with him. But other than that, you know, I was done and didn't want to come back. I just wanted to, I'd become a farmer. You know, I'd always wanted to be a farmer. And out here, I raise sheep and ducks and fish and fruit. And I spear fish. And so I'm the guy to see if you want any of that. And my neighbors know it. And it's a great place. It's a great way to live.
It does. It sounds like a great life for anybody who's able to do it. But it's kind of amazing. I mean, you were barefoot in the ring. I imagine you're barefoot there. When did that come about? Were you a Superfly fan? Is that what it started with, or no?
No, I took my boots off before Snuka did. I think I did.
So where'd that come from? Why did you go without the boots? You felt better in the ring?
Jimmy and I were always buddies, but I just, you know, I had knee surgery. I had quite a few knee surgeries.
Yeah.
And so when, you know, I wore leather boots back in that day, and, you know, with the socks we wear, they soak up sweat, and that's a lot of weight. And so one night I just thought, screw it. I left my boots. I'm going to wrestle barefoot. And I loved it, man. It felt so good to me. I thought I'd never going to wear them again. And it, you know, I was able to fly. I felt like like the law of gravity didn't apply anymore. And so that's why I did all that crazy stuff too. I just felt great because from, you know, when your feet have all that sweat soaked in your socks and your boots too, that's a lot of weight. And and enough for me that when I took my boots off, it felt so good. I felt like just showing off. I guess that's why I did it. I was showing off.
Was there ever any incidents where it might have been better if you were wearing boots? Did you ever have anything bad happen? I would imagine, like, leaping outside the ring.
Cigarettes. I hate that. I hate stepping on cigarettes. That was a major buzzkill for me.
I can imagine.
Other than that, though, no, I never hurt. I've had cows and horses step on my bare feet before. I've got good, solid, sturdy feet, and by going barefoot, my feet stay healthy, you know, strong, and I don't have foot problems.
Yeah.
And none of my kids don't wear shoes.
Yeah. Through the years, I mean, you and your family can never be separated from professional wrestling. You're now in the Hall of Fame. But do you ever look back and think about what wrestling brought to your life and what it took away?
Yeah, I do a lot, man. I'll tell you, every day, I only sleep for about 4 hours a night. I don't need a lot of sleep. And so, I've done a lot, but I do lay still, you know, and I stay, kind of meditate, I suppose. I just, I think about that a lot. And Sean, I can only think that I've been completely, totally blessed. I think I may not win the award, but I think I'm the luckiest guy in the world. By losing what I've lost, I've in my family. There's nothing like family. That's nothing else is going to last. Your family is everything. And I lost mine. And it gave me a perspective to look at that I didn't want to lose this second one, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Whatever. I would tell you, I adore my kids. I mean, I adore everything my sons did, my daughters too. I scout mom. You know, I couldn't stand them sending them to kindergarten. Some people can't do it because it takes so much money to raise kids. But if you can, it'll be the most fun you ever had. Put all of your heart into it and you'll love it because it's the best, it's the greatest gift a man can have is raising his sons.
Well, and with that, Kevin, you mentioned that they're involved in the business now, and it sounds like they've got a great opportunity coming their way. Did you... early on, was this something they wanted you to do? Did you ever want to steer them away from it and have them go in a different direction? Or how did they end up doing this?
Well, I did tell, Sean, I'm sorry, but I'll say that. I know that some people had a terrible experience with their dad in it, but what I'm saying is, take that and try to turn it into lemonade. That's what I mean. Stop that cycle now, so it doesn't go away because it's destructive. But as far as what you just said, then, I did try to turn my sons away. I remember saying, do you want to walk like me? Like this? Do you want to be hunched over most of the day? I mean, he's seen my wrestler friends come over to visit me over here, He saw Tommy Rogers hobbling all over. I said, do you want to look like us? And he said, Dad, yeah, of course we do. And then I remembered what it was like. I wanted to be like my dad, too. What can you say? They're men. They can do what they want. I just offered the opportunity I could, and they make their call.
Yeah, it's in their blood. I don't think you can do anything about it, Kevin.
I think so.
So are Ross and Marshall any good?
Yes. They've invented moves. They have moves I've seen no one else do that they've done. So, yeah, stay, fire away and fall back because it's coming. I think you're going to be surprised. In fact, call me after it's over. Tell me what you think.
I will. I'd love to. Folks, I mean, you got to watch out for Ross and Marshall Von Erich as the Von Erich family lives on here, and they're going to be involved in it. What's it called again, Kevin?
It's World Class Revolution. And it'll be on June 2nd on Saturday nights after Saturday Night Live on NBC.
Wow. I'm definitely going to be doing my homework now on that. I really want to thank you for coming on, Kevin. I've wanted to talk to you for a long time. I think that we met once or twice. I think you were at some of the events that Carrie was at. But you're a shining example to people of you know, moving on. And what you've lived through, I think, is just incredible. But you made a choice that, you know, you were going to have your family, and they're doing very well, and you live in a beautiful place. I think a lot of people would love to live in Kauai, but really, thank you so much for coming on Primetime.
Well, thank you, man. I appreciate it. It's a pleasure talking to you. Have a great show, and man, all my love to everybody.